Okay, I'm going to call a meeting of the Greater Minnesota Economic Workforce Development Policy to order. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move House File 808 for passage, and it goes to jobs. So with that, House File 808 helps with the growth and prosperity of Minnesota by investing an innovative business development public infrastructure grant program. My bill would have Minnesota Management and Budget sell $2 million in bonds and appropriate the proceeds of deed to fund these grants, effectively putting people to work, building economic prosperity, and lowering the cost of development for private projects. These are competitive projects that local units of government wouldn't be able to afford otherwise. This successful program, since 2010, 16 projects with IBDPI grants helped create or retain over 1,100 jobs and leverage over $19.5 million in private investment. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have my testifier Kevin McKenna from DEED come all kinds of wonderful things.
Welcome, and if you could state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, Kevin McKenna, Deputy Commissioner of Economic Development at DEED. Thank you for having me here today to talk briefly about the Innovative Business Development Public Infrastructure Program. It is a mouthful to say, so when I refer to IBDI, that will be easier probably for me and for you to understand. This program does focus on the job creation and retention through the growth of innovative businesses and organizations by providing grants to local government units on a competitive basis statewide for up to 50% of the public infrastructure necessary to support the business expansion. The IDBI program funds publicly owned infrastructure related to a development project, including projects that highlight manufacturing, technology, warehouse and distribution, research and development, innovative business incubator, agricultural processing, industrial office, or research park development that would be used by an innovative business. Funds from this program can also be used for land acquisition and preparation, telecommunications.
Mr. McKinnon,
yes.
Can I just interrupt you for a minute? We do have a quorum, so I'd like to officially start the meeting. And with Representative Hancock, would you move the minutes?
I just quickly read them, Mr. Chair, and I will move the minutes of February 24th.
Okay, thank you. We are ready to roll. Mr. McKinnon, if you please continue.
You. Funds from this program can be used for land acquisition and preparation, telecommunications, bridges, parking ramps, demolition, hazard remediation, pre-design, construction, equipment, and furnishings of publicly owned infrastructure. We use the definition of innovative business, or one that's engaged in or is committed to engage in innovation in Minnesota in one of the following: proprietary technology to add value to a product, a process, service, or a service in a high technology field, researching or developing proprietary products, processes, or services in a high technology field, much like some of the other programs that we have at DEED. The IBDI program targets infrastructure investment specifically to lower the cost of development projects and to make these feasible for not only local units of government but also the private business. Since 2010, the department has awarded nearly $8.2 million in IBDI grants to complete 16 projects with the following results: over almost $20 million in leveraged private investment. Now, I will caveat that by saying the leveraged private investment here is simply the cost of the public infrastructure. It's not the cost of the entire project that it was supporting, and over 1,100 new or retained jobs. Over the years, for example, the IBDI program was critical to the expansion of Daikin in Owatonna, the St. Jude Medical expansion in Little Canada, the Midwest Technology Campus in Wilmer, the University of Minnesota Moorhead Biotechnology Lab expansion, Polar Semiconductor in Bloomington, as well as Olympus in Brooklyn Park. The average award ranges from about $250,000 to $1 million for this program. And IBDI funding has also been used across the state since 2007 for 10 projects in Greater Minnesota and 9 in the 7 County Metro.
Okay.
Okay. Do we have any questions for the testifier or the author? Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gunther, it's all good information on how good this program is, and I think everybody in the room can agree on that, but I didn't see how underfunded it is. I didn't catch that. I'm sorry.
Mr. McKenna.
If it's underfunded. Excuse me.
Mr. Chair, members, this program currently has a few hundred thousand dollars remaining in it. The last appropriation for this might have been in about 2010 or 11, and it would have been $4 million in that range. The previous, previously in about 2008, there was about $8 million assigned to this program. It really started out of a couple of different projects that the legislature awarded. One was the Medtronic expansion up on 35W to support the transportation infrastructure there, and the second was the Biobusiness Center in Rochester that we did with that program.
Thank you. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier, Mr. McKinnon. You've got listed on your on the handout, you've got a Medtronic, and you've got I'm looking for the one on Otana, Viracon. Do these help smaller smaller companies expand in Fairmont or Jackson or Elbow Lake? I mean, do you have some examples of those off the top of your head, I'm sure?
Mr. McKinnon?
Mr. Chair, members, directly related, I think a good example would be the project in Willmar, where we supported the Midwest Technology Campus in partnership with the University of Minnesota, that was supporting a variety of small companies that were located at the campus, one of which being Epitopics at the time, and others would probably be the best example of that. The other way that this sort of helps businesses in that area is that when the infrastructure is provided to that industrial park for an innovative business, just as an example, other businesses are also locating in that park or could locate in that park and definitely would be using that.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Mahoney,
and again, having sat on this committee for many years with the author of these bills, sometimes I ask the question more to help newer members kind of find out about some of these programs, because some of them, quite often, the smallest unknown projects programs at DEED are the ones that actually return the biggest return on their of our dollar. So one of the things I would ask the testifier and DEED as a whole to do a better job of is how these smaller programs like this, and be it the IBDI or the how we fund the small business development centers or the small entrepreneur stuff, is let our members understand with a list of who you help. Because I know what you've done. Representative Gunther knows what you've done. A couple of the other committee members here have seen some of it. But there's a lot of there's a lot of churn on this particular committee, and Representative Gunther and I get tired of re-education. So I'm asking you to do it.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Gunther.
I'd like to follow up on that. If any member wants a list of the projects that Deed has completed in your districts, you have only to ask for them, and we'll be glad to get them to you, because it always impresses and enlightens me when I look at that, because they do an incredible job with a lot of things.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Just a statement as I walk in. I apologize for being late. That's not my statement. But as I walked in, Mr. McKinnon talked about, I'm actually the proud carrier of that specific project at the Midwest Technology Campus. That was, in my opinion, a success, but that's because I was part of it, so I liked it a lot. And what one thing that I liked about it that I want to emphasize was, what was particular with that is private companies came in and put the match up against it. And so they put in, it was a $1.25 million grant, and when it was said and done, just because of some other things, Midwest Technology Campus put in probably about $1.6 million into it. And the reason why I emphasize that is these small projects are exactly that. They're success stories, and it shows that private industry is willing to work with Deed when there's the right opportunities. So I urge, that's why I was willing to be a co-author on this bill, so thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? With that, then, just one thing, Commissioner McKinnon, I would like a copy of the projects for my district, and if anybody else does, that would be great. With that, if Representative Gunther wants to renew his motion to move House File 808 and send it on to Jobs.
I will renew that motion, Mr. Chairman.
All right. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you very much.
Okay. We are going to move around our list a little bit, and we're going to move to House File 955. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House File 955 is an entrepreneurial development funding for small business centers at Mankato State University. House File 955 appropriates $360,000 in each year of the next biennium for grants to small businesses development centers hosted by Mankato State, and a program to be run in conjunction with the Regional Center for Entrepreneurial Facilitation. And these funds will help continue the SBDC's award-winning work in the region. What year was it that you produced 500 some jobs in 1 year between the combination of the two, and won a national award, and they work very well together, and they work very well separately, but they really, the combination accelerates their productivity. These funds will help continue their work in the region, and has proved to be added value to help start growing businesses since 2007. So with that, I want you to think about how many people you know had a very good idea to start a business, but they didn't know where to go to it with it next. Bob, I bet you've had those. And we got to have some place to go, and that's what the combination of these two do, and they do everything very well together. So with that, I'll ask Michael Nolan and Brian Stading to speak up and describe what they want to do with this money.
Whichever one wants to go first, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Brian Stading, Executive Director of the Regional Center for Entrepreneurial Facilitation. I would direct you to the packet that I believe all of you have received within your packet. And we'll just start on page one. The South Central Minnesota Small Business Development Center, the SBDC office, and the Regional Center for Entrepreneurial Facilitation, the RCEF office, came together 4 years ago to realize a truly cooperative partnership, one that is unique and extremely successful. The South Central Collaboration Business Development Partnership brings together two organizations that previously competed for funding, clients, and community partners. Both organizations were administered by the Department of Employment and Economic Development, DEED, and had redundant administration, staff, and expenses. This resulted in unleveraged funding, missed opportunities, underserved markets, and confusion among business owners.
I'm Michael Nolan. I'm the director of the Small Business Development Center, and I work at Minnesota State University, Mankato. When we came together, we really identified areas of excellence that we both focused on, and were able to craft an offering to the public that was simple, it was easy to understand, and it was non-repetitive. We leveraged additional federal dollars into our region. We have over 41 funding partners through county resources. We engaged local communities and banking partners and county board members. The collaboration has strengthened more small businesses and created more jobs last year than really ever before. And we have the results on the following pages. So we're asking for continued funding to expand our services. We want to expand out to even more rural communities and establish even more local partnerships and help grow more businesses and jobs. We've launched some pilot initiatives this past year, and we hope to continue to launch those. One of the most exciting is to engage our local students to go back to their rural communities to do business needs analysis, try to knock on every single business door in our small towns, and in cooperation with DEED, publish this information and actually respond to it and help craft our service offerings to meet the needs of our small businesses. We're also working with developing an International Trade Assistance Center in cooperation with our Minnesota Department of Trade. We had a very good event last December. We've shown a strong need in the community for these centers. Other states are, quite frankly, beating us at these, and we're hoping to get that project off the ground as well. So if you turn to the next page, you'll see our results. We were able to leverage additional federal funding last year. You need a state dollar if you're going to be able to bring in a federal dollar. We had 134% of the hours of consulting. We saw more than one client a day come into our centers combined. We had 35 new business starts. And Mr. Chairman, I know we met earlier with you, and I was saying that out of about 250 people who come in with an idea to start a business, we have 35 of them get started. All told, $18 million of bank and owner-invested financing, much of that through DEED's lending programs, and creating 656 jobs. And I do want to point out that that number is actually based from DEED's own number. They survey every single one of our businesses that we help. They do a satisfaction survey, and they also calculate the jobs off an independent survey. Those aren't our numbers that we're talking about.
You know, one of the things that we've always looked at is, and I'm on page three, is really what does it cost to create a job? And on page three, we're down to about $213 of state funds to create that. And we're proud of that. We've created a very efficient, effective model based on a lot of shoestring budgets and a lot of boots on the street. A lot of the independent clients that we use are paid a very, very small fee. Based within their own industry, they would make a whole lot more. We're really blessed to be able to have them at our disposal, and those components really are the components that are able to move these ideas, these small businesses forward to actually create these jobs.
At the bottom of the page, you'll see a statistic that quite frankly surprised us. I asked our graduate students. We were able to engage over 1,300 hours of student time this year, so I think that's one of the great things that we do. And we had those students contact every single business that we've helped start over the past 5 years, and 92% of them answered the phone. And so I was very proud of that number. On the next page, we talk about our new business initiatives. I'm going to have Brian speak to the Main Street Business Retention Project.
You know, and this is probably, this has been in the works for many years, but our goal initially was to walk through the front door of every business in every small town within our 9-county area. That was a very ambitious goal. And really how we pulled this thing together, Mike and I created where we were going to have, we'll have students, a group of students per county. Those students will have come from that county, hopefully. We don't care where they go to school, what college, doesn't matter. When they come back, we'll train them. and they will literally walk through every door of every business within that county. The nice part about this is typically we're very reactive. We just react to whatever the situation is. This is the first and only proactive approach that we've seen and really tried to, I guess, get our arms wrapped around and close enough to create a model for this. So we're able to gather that information and give it to everyone who needs it, whether or not that's state, local, county commissioners. Again, we know it's an aggressive approach, but we really feel that that's what we need to figure out is what those folks need from us, what their troubles are, what their concerns are, what their challenges, and again, hopefully help them expand as well as keep the door open.
The next project is to expand our satellite service centers. We were successful in getting Waseca started. Waseca started the BEST program, Business and Entrepreneurial Support Team. This is owned by Waseca. They put their own money into it. The Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation helped fund that startup, and we're able to engage a retired banker in the community who has helped start businesses and gotten loans. And so that's that kind of grassroots, local-supported. And they're all within our same umbrella, so we're all working together for the same things, and we're hoping to get those started in New Ulm, Sibley County, Wanton. We have a pilot project started, so we're really hoping to use this money to help leverage those local dollars. Youth entrepreneurship is near and dear to my heart. We're able to work with our student groups and help start businesses. We're bringing in Junior Achievement. We'll be having a summer program in Mankato, and they're refocusing on entrepreneurship. So anytime we can get our students engaged and involved and actually have our students help our small businesses, I think that's a win for everyone. The Export Assistance Center, and I have further research and study on this. We had an event in December. We went out and we surveyed a couple hundred businesses. We had face-to-face interviews with 36 of those to get their attitudes towards export assistance. And what we learned was that most people either are accidental exporters or they don't export but think that there is a market out. We did this in cooperation with Minnesota Department of Trade, United States Commercial Service, Ex-Im Bank, and the SBA. They were all at our event. We know that we need this. Illinois, Wisconsin, and Iowa, and both Dakotas have these export assistance centers. And what they do is they work inside the businesses to help those businesses prepare to work with Minnesota Department of Trade. And Brian, do you want to talk about BizPitch?
BizPitch was really created out of the necessity that we could help folks with their business plans one-on-one in our offices. But we quickly realized that once they got in front of those lenders, banks, private investors, they would really fall apart. And I'm sure a number of you have seen Shark Tank. This thing has been in the works for years. The beauty of it is we have no money. We're just helping them perfect their pitch. Started out small, and we've been inundated with folks coming to the table with their ideas, everything from just pitching an idea to pitching the idea ready to go to the lender. So it's been a very successful program as far as that's concerned. It's brought the community involved. We typically have about a half a dozen individuals from within the industry at each one of them. And I'll be honest with you, we stole the idea from Iowa. We went down and visited firsthand. They were doing a nice job with it, and so we adapted it and changed it and brought it to our region.
So, Mr. Chair, thank you very much for allowing us. If you have any questions, there are a couple more pages there if you'd like to read. But Representative Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to tell you the vision that we have developed for this, and that is after we get through with Region 9, if it is successful and we agree with the results as a legislature and as this committee, as well as the Jobs Finance Committee, if we do that, then we want to move to make this a statewide program, so we do the same type of thing in every region in Minnesota, including the metro area. And I think this will produce more jobs at a lesser cost than any program that I know of in the state. And I think it will make us much more competitive, and I can only think of one thing. We have a dream. I remember hearing that speech. And that dream, for me, is to produce jobs in Minnesota that pay well and that are all throughout the state. And that's why I want to pass this bill. I want to see the results statewide, and I think that's very possible. So please vote green or yes.
We have a question. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Norm, I think it is. We spoke, I think, last week or whatever, and part of the result of that was a bill that was introduced, not by myself, but by someone else, for funding for the SBDCs. Seems like, you know, you're asking for, this bill comes up to about a little over $700,000. Would you be willing to donate your SBDC money to the other other eight?
Yeah,
nine?
That's exactly what we've talked about as the state network. So that works out to $50,000 per year per region, which which still results in less than a one-to-one match. The state receives $1.7 million approximately from the Small Business Administration, divides that amongst the 10 regions in the state. So it's about $170,000. And so the Representative Mahoney introduced a bill last year for $500,000, worked out to $50,000 per region. So yeah, we do some balancing within the state based on the results of that and the carryovers and those kind of things. And we really do have a good SBDC network statewide. We do work very closely together and move money in between the regions as needed. So.
Mr. Chair, if we at the legislature are authorizing it, you're moving the money on us?
No, Deed is. Not us.
We've got a couple other questions. Your Main Street business retention. You know, I'm getting famous, apparently, for asking if you're members of the Minnesota Chamber. That's a program that's touted by the Minnesota Chamber. Have you seen the Minnesota Chamber down there doing that, or is it mostly you guys doing it?
So, absolutely. In fact, last week the acting president of the Minnesota Chamber was down at MSU, and we talked about this program. This would be much more of a needs assessment on the very rural businesses. I forget the number, but it's in the hundreds of businesses statewide every year. You know, so they've got about a 10-year cycle. They don't simply have the manpower to knock on every one and two employee kind of businesses that we have. So I think this would be very complimentary. We'd share the data with them. We do, you know, they're part of our constituency.
So what you're telling me is that you guys are doing a better job than the Minnesota Chamber.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
That's kind of rhetorical. We'll just leave it go at that. Representative Gunther, good bill. I actually like your bill. It's something that I think the whole program, you and I worked on it last year. It seems that you've picked it up this year, something called economic gardening. I'd love to see that funded at a much higher level, and this is a good start. I think we started last year. It's a good continuation. I would love to see the Department of Economic Gardening over at Deed or, you know, whatever, funded at that $10 or $15 million so that they could do the whole statewide. Because, frankly, if you can create a job for $265 versus the $12,000 it typically costs us, it's a good return on the dollar. And then one other thing, maybe this has something to do with the fact that Walmart has to now pay $16 an hour down in Mankato as a starting wage. Maybe we're going to start actually seeing wages go up in greater Minnesota. And then you guys can lead the way, and we can get the wages going up in the metro area, which I would appreciate. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'm done.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure there's much left to say. but I did want to thank you for your presentation. And when I was a new legislator, Representative Gunther invited me down to his community to go to an event where I met Brian and actually invited Brian back to my community to participate in an event. And I'm just This is just another idea, the really good work you do, and I've been really impressed. So thank you. And Mr. Nolan, you know, your enthusiasm for your project is great. I was going to ask some of the questions that Representative Gunther has answered already about moving this out further, because I think it's a great idea. So I guess what I would just ask of you, besides thank you for your innovations, is how you came up with the $360,000 per year budget and how you're going to spend that.
Sure. It's actually a return to about half of what the baseline used to be on a per county basis. So in the late 2000s, this was funded at about $69,000 per county. And if you do the math and divide by 9, it comes out to about half of that, I think we came up with. And then the line item budgets fall between our different line items that would pay for one of our full-time staff in our department, and about 1,000 hours of consulting in ours. It would pay for about another full-time staff in yours, and a little more in the hours of consulting. And then we have different budgets for each one of the different initiatives, student payroll being one of the most exciting. So we could supply a more detailed budget.
So if I could,
there's a whiteboard involved.
Representative Norton.
I'm sure there is. So you're getting back to a level of funding that half of the level of funding that you've had before, as I understand it. So
right, but okay. we do see some real economies of scale. You know, before each organization had to compile all the reports and all the financials and all the billing that DEED requires on a monthly basis, and that was time consuming. So now we've really eliminated half of that, and it is one thing the university does very well, is handle that kind of accounting. So we've saved money there.
I might add, one of these people is very good at that, and one is not quite that good. So it's a combination of the two really works out well.
Thank you.
Any more questions? Then I guess we will ask Representative Gunther if he would renew his motion to pass and refer House File 955 and send it on to Jobs.
That is my request.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gunther, you have another bill, House File 409.
That's correct. And this is a program that I've been familiar with since I've been here. It is a program for the Center for Independent Living, and it is one program that I can honestly say that doesn't cost the state money, because it saves the state more money than it costs. It takes people that could have been institutionalized and helps them live independently. And on top of that, I sat in their office one day, and I didn't tell them I was there, and I watched how the receptionist acted. And they are the best referral agency handicapped people can have, because any problem they had an answer who to go see and get help. So House File 409 appropriates $2,953,000 for each year for the next biennium for grants to nonprofit centers for independent living, which are committed to self-determination, choice, and autonomy, and full participation for all Minnesotans with disabilities in all of the activity, events, and routines and roles of all citizens. They actually go into nursing homes and help people that are in nursing homes live independently. And you look at the dollars we save by having them do this, and the institutionalization dollars that we are spending today, and if they can help people live independently for a whole lot less, this is one that has an immediate return on our investment. So with that, I'd like to have somebody that was a long-term friend of mine that was with SILS, and the first person I met with that organization, please.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can you please state your name and what you do for the record?
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is David Hancox, and I'm here at the request today of the Minnesota Association of Centers for Independent Living to provide some testimony and context to House File 409. And obviously, we are certainly in support of House File 409. I see some familiar faces around the table, and I see some new faces that I haven't had the pleasure of meeting. So if you'll indulge me for just a couple of moments, I'll give a little bit of background about the centers, and then I'll certainly be happy to take any questions, Mr. Chair, that the committee might have. Mr. Gunther's introduction to the Centers for Independent Living and his comments surrounding House File 409 were pretty complete and provided a very nice endorsement for the services that are provided by the Centers for Independent Living. There are 8 Centers for Independent Living located around the state of Minnesota. They're located in Rochester, Sauk Rapids, St. Cloud, Moorhead, East Grand Forks, St. Paul, Hibbing, Mankato, and Marshall. Each of those 8 centers serves a large multi-county region of anywhere between 7 and 9 counties each. And each of those centers also sporadically reaches into other neighboring counties that may not be a specific assignment for their catchment area. Currently, 76 out of the 86 Minnesota counties are recipients of services from the Minnesota Centers for Independent Living. As Representative Gunther stated, the Centers for Independent Living exist for 3 real specific reasons. Everybody who receives services from the Center for Independent Living, the goal for those individuals is to provide services that enable individuals to live self-directed lives in the communities of their choice. It's to prevent out-of-home placements for those individuals, more costly out-of-home placements, and to ensure a meaningful participation in the community life of the communities in which they live. In federal fiscal year 2014, which just ended here recently, 78,951 citizens of the state of Minnesota were served by the Centers for Independent Living. House File 409, if approved and passed, would enable the Centers for Independent Living to raise the funding level to an amount that is consistent with the recommended amount in the State Plan for Independent Living, or it's commonly called the SPIL. The SPIL sets out long-range goals and activities for the Centers for Independent Living and other independent living services in the state. It would establish the recommended minimum funding level for those centers, and it would also close the gaps of those counties that are not currently served so that we would establish a completed statewide network. To one of Mr. Gunther's or Representative Gunther's points about the Nursing Home Relocation Program, which is one of the 5 core services of the Center for Independent Living, and just to kind of create some context around the value of services that are brought to the state of Minnesota. In federal fiscal year 2014, 89 individuals were assisted in their desire to relocate out of nursing homes, as Representative Gunther acknowledged. Those 89 individuals, if they continue to live in a nursing home setting, would cost the state of Minnesota approximately $7.6 million per year in services. Those same individuals can be served by Centers for Independent Living in their local communities at a cost of $67,000 per year. So that $7.6 million, it wouldn't be fair to characterize that as a cost savings. It doesn't create a pile of money that we can go and pull a 20 out of at our pleasure. But what it does provide is a cost deference. So that's $7.6 million that we don't have to go looking for to provide services for people in out-of-home placements. The added value of those that cost deferral is not just the dollars saved by the community-based services, but again, as I mentioned earlier, it also allows those individuals to pursue a community-based life in a community of their choice with full participation and allows them to seek meaningful employment in those communities as well. I don't want to belay the point. I think Mr. Representative Gunther has been very thorough in his comments as well, but I would certainly open myself to questions, Mr. Chair, at this time, if you like.
Thank you. I have one question.
Yes, sir.
Maybe you can answer. Is this money that you're asking for, is this new money, or is some of this already as what's been appropriated in the past and you're adding to?
Mr. Chair, thank you. It's an excellent question. Currently, the Centers for Independent Living receive a collective state allocation of $2.261, so $2,261,000 per year. And that's a collective dollar amount that's divided among the 8 Centers for Independent Living. So this dollar amount in House File 409 would be an increase in that base rate of $692,000 per year.
So just to clarify, then the new money you're asking for here would be $692,000.
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Okay. Are there any questions for the author or the testifier? Seeing none, I guess I will ask the author if he'd renew his motion to pass House File 409 and send it to Jobs.
Okay, I do that, Mr. Chairman.
All right, all in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much.
I would like to thank David Hancock for coming here. He's substituting for a person that wasn't able to show up. So
that put my
he's a great replacement. I've known him for years.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Hancock.
May I ask David Hancock a question?
Walk around.
It's not often, although we spell it differently. Mine's COX. How do you do, sir? It's a pleasure to meet you. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Gunther, you have another bill before us, House File 809, that you would like to have referred to Education Innovation Policy.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and House File 809 is a bill that was drafted as a result of a recommendation made by a bipartisan rural task force that met over the interim. The task force identified needs to ensure employers have the workers they need by identifying and aligning employment and training efforts for adults, career planning, and counseling of youth. And we have a DE1 amendment to this bill, and you can describe it. And I'd like to have our testifier describe the DE1 amendment. And I will move the DE1 amendment. It's to conform to recently amended Senate language. The language includes adult basic education, and as an education partner, which is important to workforce services to adults. So with that, we would like to have a testifier tell you all about this wonderful bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Gunther.
Okay. I think
we can pass the amendment.
Representative Gunther moves his amendment, and we have testified. Would you just please state your name for the record?
Should pass the amendment first, I think.
Yeah, you move your amendment, don't you?
I'll move the amendment, the DE1 amendment.
Okay.
Okay, ready?
I'm ready.
Thank you. Well, my name is Dan Winter. I'm the Executive Director of Rural Minnesota Concentrated Employment Program. We're headquartered out of Detroit Lakes. Basically, the original bill and the amendment cleans up some language in the original bill, and that's what I'm going to focus on the whole here. And I really want to thank you for letting me come here and testify today. This is really exciting for me. I've been working on getting something like this going for a long time, and have talked to a couple of you, Chairman Green and Ben Representative Green Lean in particular, on it in the past. So thanks for having me here. Rural Minnesota SEP, which I'll refer to generically as SEP, provides workforce development services in 19 counties. Our territory stretches from Lake of the Woods to Morris and from Little Falls to Moorhead, so it's a big 20,000 square mile area. We assist people obtain training they need to get work, from how to find a job to job-specific skills training. There are 16 workforce areas covering all of Minnesota, and in the packet, I think that you got, yours looks a lot cleaner than this one, but you should have a folder with Rural Minnesota SEP on it, and there's a couple of maps, including one of the in yellow of the area we serve, and the 16 workforce areas as a whole. But basically, in each, a workforce investment board, which is employer-led, provides strategic guidance. House File 809 includes initiatives that will greatly enhance the ability of SEP and other greater Minnesota workforce areas to address the workforce needs of youth and local employers. Funding is included for rural workforce system coordinators. Workforce areas have been successful in bringing together local entities, including education, government, nonprofits, employers, and workers, to identify and coordinate on workforce issues. Given the distances involved, however, in rural areas, there's always more work that could be done to align activities, and the addition of the regional coordinators described in HF 809 would certainly bolster this effort. Among the biggest frustration employers in my area have is a lack of work ethic quote unquote, among many of the young people that they're trying to hire. In my mind, though, this is a skills issue. So House File 809 also includes funding for the Minnesota Youth Program, or MYP. This program is key in providing resources to develop the basic work skills for young people. In MYP, the basic work skills of each participant are evaluated by staff. Skill deficiency is then addressed through individual counseling, curricula, and most importantly, by placing young people in subsidized employment. Working is the best way to learn how to work. Without MYP, young people in my area will be delayed in their ability to get a job in which they can develop those basic work skills that everyone needs to succeed. House File 809 also includes provisions to expand one of our core activities, career exploration and planning. This service has been provided to youth who meet low-income criteria for 45 years. 2 years ago, the legislature provided funding to allow several workforce areas, including the one that SEP operates in, to expand career exploration and planning to any high school student, regardless of income. This pilot is exploring the feasibility of taking the labor market knowledge and career planning expertise of Workforce Center youth staff and making it available to schools. In this pilot, rural Minnesota SEP in our area, who are also Workforce Center staff, work with high schools in Moorhead School District, Dilworth, Glendon, Felton School District, Barnesville, Euland, Hitterdahl, and the Red River Area Learning Center. Career counseling and knowledge of demand in occupations increase the likelihood of youth making well-informed career choices and regarding which post-secondary institutions to attend. Workforce Center staff focus on career exploration and planning, allowing the high school staff to focus on education and crisis counseling. Workforce Center staff assist students to identify a career in an occupation in demand. Our staff then work with students to identify steps needed to enter the career. The result is a plan which facilitates entry into a field in which local employers need workers. Students identify the training which they need to enter their career choice. This reduces the expense of false starts in post-secondary education, increases the pool of available workers to local employers, and reduces the time you spend drifting around in their 20s that so many of us, like myself, experienced. In addition to career counseling, services include job search assistance, including information on job search strategies and processes, individual assistance to students and families in completing financial aid applications. That job search assistance is pretty important. I remember when I was going out for my first job interview, it was the 70s, so kind of imagine how I was dressed before my dad said, "You're not going looking like that, are you?" So I got the job thanks to that, but that's the kind of assistance we can provide somebody that doesn't have a dad who happens to tell him to get his act together. So, results. Over 18 months of this pilot, we provided outreach to over 2,500 high school students. We provided group activities to nearly 1,900 youth, and this is all in the pilot we're operating in Clay County. 450 youth have received individual services. We found that one staff can provide an interest assessment, skills identification, labor market information, career exploration, and develop plans with 250 students. In addition, the staff person can provide group sessions on job search strategies, completing the FAFSA college applications and available resources. Schools do appreciate having their Workforce Center staff provide this service. In that packet I provided, there's a couple of unsolicited letters from two of the schools we're working with. Students are able to identify careers that are in demand that meet their aptitudes and interests. There's a story in there about one of the students we've been working with, so if you throw away the whole rest of the packet and read that, that'd be worth your time. So the result is that by the time youth leave high school, they have a career goal and a plan to achieve that goal, including an appropriate post-secondary education choice. The funding included in House File 809 would build on the success of the pilot projects, expand MYP, and allow career counseling to be implemented across the state. I want to leave you and the committee with one final thought. It is the foundational philosophy of rural Minnesota SEP that work is the key to a successful life. Skilled workers are key to successful businesses. Skilled workers and thriving businesses are key to strong rural economies, and the strength of Minnesota's economy is dependent on the strength of greater Minnesota's economy. House File 809 will go a long ways towards ensuring the economic strength of both rural Minnesota and the entire state. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Werner. And I think you just described the whole bill to us. So I think before we go to questions, we'll ask Representative Gunther to renew his motion to move the DE. Pardon me. And so if you would do that,
that.
Okay, all in favor of that?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, and now we'll discuss the passage of it. So we'll ask any if there's any questions. Representative Norton.
Yeah, just a couple quick questions. One is just technical. Can you explain to me on line 1.6 this exception for service areas that serve a single city outside the metropolitan area? What was that exclusion? What is that about? Okay. I just didn't understand what that was.
This is the bill, 1.16. For a service area that serves a single city outside the metropolitan area. I could answer that. Sure. That affects the city of Duluth, and to tell you the truth, I'm not sure why the authors wanted to exclude Duluth in this one, other than that they're trying to focus on nine rural workforce areas. So, best I can do, sir.
Okay, well, no, that's an explanation. And then the
Representative Gunther.
Oh, Representative Gunther.
I'd also like to say that we have Jeremy Hansen Willis here. He takes care of all the workforce centers throughout Minnesota. So I thought since he's a participant in this bill, that we should get his opinion.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Representative Norton, you had a follow-up question first.
Let him finish. That's fine.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Willis, if you would state your name and position for the record, please.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jeremy Hansen Willis. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Employment and Economic Development. And at DEED, I'm the Deputy Commissioner that oversees all of our workforce programs. And so I'm glad to have the opportunity to come and comment briefly on this today. And although this proposal was not included in the governor's budget, we have seen great promise on this, particularly the HECAP part of this, the student counseling. And as was mentioned earlier in the last biennium, the funding was provided to DEED to manage this HECAP pilot program, both in rural SEP as well as the other locations around the state in northeast Minnesota, in Stearns-Benton counties, and in Hennepin counties. And so we saw in the other pilot projects around the state the similar results that were just described to you that happened in rural Minnesota SEP. And in particular, it responds to the situation that far too many of our young people are making decisions about their future without adequate information and guidance counseling. We know that there aren't nearly enough counselors in our high schools around the state to provide adequate guidance counseling, let alone specific career guidance counseling. At the same time, we have throughout the state in our workforce centers hundreds of trained and experienced career counselors who not only have the expertise of being a career counselor, they have the knowledge of local labor and industry needs. They have access to labor market information so that they can provide to young people exactly the kind of skills and occupations and jobs that will await them should they make informed decisions while they're still in high school. We also know that as a part of the job of these counselors who work in our workforce centers, that they have connections with businesses. They have on-the-ground knowledge of what businesses need in their areas. And so this expertise, the networks, the relationships that they have can all be leveraged and add value to young people in our schools. And so we have seen great promise with this program and would and support its continued and future success.
Okay. Representative Norton.
Yeah, I'll just finish now. Thank you for that. I really appreciate those comments from all the testifiers. I do think this counseling issue is key, and not just because of, you know, kind of the traditional talk about needing, you know, a certain ratio of counselors, but because we know that many of the new jobs, as well as current jobs, are out there and students don't even know to go into those areas. They're not even familiar with the job, and nor are their parents. And so over the summer, I worked quite a bit on the pipeline project, which I'm sure you're aware of because, you know, it's been talked about within the departments, I'm sure. And that is one of the outcomes that we determined from the whole summer of work there, is we can put together this dual education program, but someone has to do the counseling part. Someone has to do the outreach to the students from the time they're in school, as well as when they're getting ready to make that decision to go on to college or to a career and technical school, about what the options are, and if they don't know, they don't choose them. And so I really think this is important, and I think it's nice to see us stepping outside, you know, kind of the traditional concept that the counselor has to come from the school, but it can indeed come from the workforce or an organization like this who works with DEED and does this outreach. So I'm very supportive of the concept and wish you success.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So much like Representative Norton, I think it's a great concept. I think it's a great program, and I like it a lot. I guess my question is, I'm not so sure if this type of program is in the urban community, in the most challenged communities, where this is so often needed, because there's many challenges with larger classroom. There's greater challenges around disparities in many of the urban communities. You know, the need to have someone to help navigate and network and build relationships and create job opportunities is so needed in the urban community. And so I'm just wondering why we are just focusing on the rural community when the population is in the urban community is so greater and so much needed.
Representative Gunther?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Moran, this is also in Metro. It's also in Hennepin County. It is meant for people that are not post-secondary education bound or that don't have a high school degree. Mm-hmm. Somewhere, someone has to find out what the ability, aptitude, and interest of these young people are. And the worst one is the one that drops out of college because they have flunked out. They are totally humiliated, and we have to find something that will give them the tools that they can go get a job in a field that they have an interest in and aptitude in, and that's why we're going to have the people from the workforce centers go do ability, aptitude, and interest testing to find out what they'd be good at. And I look at we have career counselors. I called three seniors in Worthington, three seniors in Mankato, and three seniors in Fairmont. I didn't know any names for people from Hennepin County, Minneapolis, but I would have called them if I did. And I asked them how many minutes of career counseling they got in their high school situation from sophomore on up. The average answer was less than 5 minutes. I'm sorry, I envision having a computer that we can set on iSeek so people can look at what jobs are, what they pay, what the requirements for those jobs as far as training is concerned. Yeah. I want everyone to have a job, the very best job they could possibly have. That's why this bill's here.
Yeah. Mr. Chair.
Representative Moran.
Well, Representative Gunther, I am with you, totally. Totally there with you, believe it's needed and something that we need to do now. And so I guess I'm so used to hearing you saying rural rural Minnesota that I missed the part that it was a statewide initiative, right? And so I am totally agreeing with you. Yes, so thank you for the bill.
Would you like to add anything?
Mr. Chair, members, the only thing that I would add is that I think experience tells us that those who benefit from these kind of public investments the most are those who aren't getting it in other places, and those tend to be exactly the kind of young people that we're talking about who don't have other means, maybe don't have family or social networks that help them make these connections, and those are the folks who I think can benefit the most from the work that the counselors do. And I also think, as was mentioned, that these don't happen in isolation, that there are other programs like other parts of the Minnesota Youth Program, the Youth at Work Competitive Dollars, there are other tools at place that also help to reach out to those young people who are most at risk that would work in concert with this program.
One last comment: the career counseling and the basic work skills development is statewide, and the reason that this is being channeled through the Minnesota Youth Program is because that is a statewide program. All 16 workforce areas, all 87 counties, are served through this program. So those services to youth will be delivered in every part of the state. Thank you.
Okay. We have more questions. Representative Barrett?
Nope.
Okay. Representative O'Neill?
Thank you, Chair. I just have sort of a little technical question, and maybe you can answer it from Deed. So I'm just trying to get my mind around who these new people would be. Is it possible that they could be independent contractors, or is this prescribed to be an additional state employee, or can you answer that?
Intention would be...
intention would be that there would be people like Workforce Center people that have the knowledge and the ability to do ability, aptitude, and interest testing, that knows the job market, and that can give good counseling to people that are non-post-secondary education-bound students. And we have to have something that we can recommend classes even in school that they could take that will match your ability, aptitude, and interest.
Thank you. This is because it's operated through workforce areas and workforce centers. The people that would be employed for this would, in the case of rural Minnesota, SEP, we're a private nonprofit, so our people would not be state employees. In the metro area, and in particular, there would be workforce areas would likely contract with entities to do this work. That's their mode of operation. So, which could include contracting with the state to do this, or DEED in particular, if they have people that could do this work. So what we would be doing is looking for the best people to do the job. It doesn't necessarily get funneled through through state employees, for example. So.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, part of the reason of the complication of the answer is that workforce centers are staffed differently in different parts of the state. Because of the collaborative nature that we have and the local control that exists in terms of the guidance so that all of our workforce centers meet local needs. So as Mr. Winter just said, in some cases the workforce centers are staffed by DEED staff and state employees. In other cases they're staffed by local nonprofit staff or the local workforce area staff. But I think what we're talking about in the experience that we've had in the pilot program, that these are trained job counselors, so they're credentialed and experienced in job counseling, and they provide this kind of counseling to adults all the time. So they're that kind of person is just applying those information and resources in the schools as well.
Hello.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. So do you actually have a breakdown then of, you know, your targeted centers, or do you have it that prescribed in the bill, or so do we know how many will be DEED employees, and if so, what's the union that would be associated with DEED also? Do you know the breakdown between, like, nonprofit, private people versus state?
No. There isn't anything in the bill that talks about even how the funding would be distributed among workforce centers other than that it would be negotiated between DEED and the local workforce areas. That's what the bill calls for right now. And then how it would be divided between employees isn't in there yet at all. So,
Representative O'Neill.
And just the final follow-up, to DEED. So which union would that be then that would be employees of DEED if that was the case?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, my hunch is AFSCME. Possibly also made.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gunther, I do want to thank you for bringing this bill forward, and I've sat down with Mr. Winter a couple times and spoken about the different programs, projects the workforce centers are involved with, and I think, bringing younger people up into the ranks of the workforce, you know, any way we can to get them to recognize their skills, their talents, their abilities is, you know, in my opinion, money well invested. And I just have a question. I know folks throughout this conversation have kind of alluded to this a little bit, but just kind of, I guess, just to lay it out for myself, if anything, how do you envision the outreach going to the students? You know, is this going to be half the time this counselor is going to be spending in the schools, half the time in the actual workforce office, or is this going to be in conjunction with other folks in the schools? If you can elaborate on that a little bit.
I can talk to you a bit about how it works in my area in particular, and to some extent up in Northeast. Our youth coordinators or youth counselors that do this work with the schools go over to the schools to do this work, trying to take and coordinate with free periods, sometimes embedded in classes, for example. But the idea is first to find out exactly what the school needs, in the sense that some schools in my area have a fairly robust career program, or you know, and some have virtually nothing. So we're not there to take anything away. We're going, but we're going to the school, finding out what they need. We're there as a resource. Generally, what we get as a response from our the counselors is, you know, thank goodness you're here, because I'm really afraid that I haven't been able to address this particular need when somebody comes in that wants career information, because they're having to deal with those crisis situations. We just had a presentation yesterday from one of my staff to my own board of directors on this, and the message she brought from Moorhead School was, tell them we want you here full time. So, but I guess I would say the way it works is we are going to the schools. You know, we only have 8 workforce centers in a 20,000 square mile area, so it wouldn't be practical to have the youth coming to the workforce centers. But we do include information on the workforce centers as we go to the schools and arrange for tours and so forth, so the kids know what resources are available. If I didn't answer your question, ask me again, and I'll try.
No, that, Mr.
Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, that was good. Innovation and partnerships. That's good. Thank you.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, for clarity, I need some clarity here. I'm looking at line 1.1 to line 1.5. Those lines specifically says it's relating to rural workforce development, providing for rural workforce system coordinators. It specifically says rural Minnesota. And, you know, I think language matters. And it's very clear to me, you know, on these first 5 lines, what this means. And so, you know, we can't say it's statewide when it's in print that it's focused on rural Minnesota.
Representative Moran, we just talked to Ms. Newman, and she's drafting an amendment to get that done.
Okay, and would that be today, or
no,
is it travel?
Yeah, it goes to jobs.
Okay, so the expectation is that there will be an amendment too. All right, thank you.
I didn't know it was there, but I checked it as soon as she told me it was.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, and if I might, when this was originally drafted, that part that talks about rural workforce areas only refers to the coordination aspect of it, not the services as a whole. So
I can't tell by the language.
Sure.
You'll have it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, is there any other questions? Seeing none, Representative Gunther, do you renew your motion to send House File 809 to Education Innovation Policy?
Yes, I do.
All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We have one more bill today.
Last but not least.
House File 519. Okay. And it's co-authored, it appears, between Representatives Gunther and Representatives Norton. Representative Gunther, would you care to move House File 519?
I would like to move House File 519. And 519. I got 955 here. 519?
519.
Okay. House File 519 increases the amount of tax credits available under Minnesota Angel Tax Credit for qualified investors to $17 million from the current $15 million by increasing our investments in angel investment tax credits. We can continue to encourage job creation and economic growth across the state of Minnesota. And with that, I'd love to have my testifiers tell you all about it. Genevieve, you want to start?
Sure.
Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Genevieve Plumidor with Life Science Alley. I've been before your committee a couple of times already this year, so I'll keep it pretty brief. Just want to be on the record on behalf of the organization in support of increasing the funding for this great tax credit, which has leveraged many investment dollars here in Minnesota, specifically for the life sciences in our companies. Angel investments at the earliest stages of development are necessary to ensure that Minnesota continues to remain a robust medical technology hub in the country. And with that, I will cede my time to the other testifier. Thank you.
Please state your name.
Hi again, my name is Chad Olson. I'm the CEO of Buy Me.
I'll keep it brief, too, because I recognize all your friendly faces, so it's good to be back. But I do have actually an interesting testimonial for you guys. I have an update since the last time I was here. Long story short, I just received and was approved for another $250,000 for the Angel Tax Credit. So thank you to all of you indirectly, I guess. And then also, it is a very wonderful program. I think you already know my stance on that, but I just wanted to let you know in the past time, my company already has expanded to Duluth. I'm based out of St. Paul right now. We're actually moving to Plymouth, so I know that's last time was get to the east side, but unfortunately going to the west. But anyways, long story short, my company has already expanded the initial tax credit that I just received as of like yesterday afternoon. It's wonderful news, and it's also spurred me to expand my business and I'm looking currently into expanding into other states as soon as at the end of this year. So as always, I do encourage you guys to vote yes on this thing. It's a wonderful program. Also, I just worked with the people at the office. They are absolutely great. And I would love to see other people like myself sitting in this chair someday as we keep growing it in the future years. And as always, not only are we bringing Kevin Garnett back home, but I would love to keep the entrepreneurs in the state and bring them back home where they belong. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Congratulations, and I hope that you don't move too much of your business to other states. Is there any questions for the author or the testifier? Well, this looks like it's going to be easy then, Representative Gunther.
I will renew my motion to have House File 519 pass and be referred to jobs.
All right. Representative Gunther renews his motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Members, I'd like to thank you for suffering through five bills from one person. I appreciate your patience.
Mr. Chair, you're never suffering.
Well, I don't see anything else, so we are adjourned.